Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We have a serious subject this morning. Not because the material itself need be presented in a serious manner, although it must be treated with the proper respect. It's serious, what we're going to talk about, because it has to do with your heart. It's serious because it has to do with the mind that you live with and in, and the experiences that it generates for you. It's serious because until a person understands that their relationship with life is not the experience of life acting on them, but an expression of a person who has lost the understanding of what it means to be a part of life's action itself. And until that change takes place in you, until you actually for yourself understand what it means to be alive, and you don't. All that can happen day in and day out is that you will live from a nature that produces the sensation of being alive, all unseen within you because of the way in which images produce attachment, and attachment produces sensation, and desire flowers out of that, and a person's caught up in all of that, invisible to you. And all that does work in terms of being visible for you is the unhappiness that you have, the displeasure you have with people for not doing what they're supposed to do, the discontentment with life because it didn't hold up just when you thought you were going to stand on something real. 100,000 plus examples of where, because a person meets life from a total misunderstanding of it, their life is miserable. And I want to say this to you. If you put 100 million miserable people together in a stadium, no one knows they're part of the stadium. This is the world that you live in. Men and women consumed with self-concern that they believe is the same thing as participating in life. And the life that the individuals who are self-absorbed and aching from that life is not real life. It is a life that has been created within them by their own misunderstanding of what it means to be a human being, awake and fulfilling the purpose of this life. The purpose of this life is to be reborn. Any other purpose misses the mark. There is no other reason to exist other than the discovery that it is possible for a person to transcend the tormenting thoughts and feelings that come when life doesn't produce what they'd hoped it does. And in the discovery of that ability to transcend the mind that produces the misery, to come into relationship with a completely different order of mind, a completely different order of consciousness that is in itself what it means to be reborn. Rebirth is not just the idea that one says, I'm this or I'm that or this has happened to me. Rebirth is the actual entrance into a broader kingdom that gives rise to the present kingdom that keeps you a captive because it's made up only of your thoughts and feelings, only of you thinking about people and places and possessions, and then from a derivative experience of that consideration, spending your time in conflict and trying to figure out how to control things around you. Virtually no one on this planet understands what it means to be reborn. You go and you read magazine articles and you hear speakers and you pick up books and all these people, because they have read certain things and their mind can freely associate principles, they can get all pumped up for a few moments while they're sitting there in the midst of their own self-enclosed glory, believing that somehow or other the images that they're reviewing in their mind, full of that content and its comfort, is the same thing as living in a new world from a new mind. Nothing could be further from the truth. And part of a gradual process of a person awakening, which is what's required. First, one awakens to the fact of the world in which they live, not the fantasy. They awaken to the fact of the world in which they lived, in which they live. And in that awakening, they start to understand that that fascination that they have, you, the fascination they have with someone, what he or she didn't do, that fascination with the idea of money, What I'll be and have when I get it. That fascination with tomorrow, when everything's going to be different than it is today. God, I hope so. That fascination with what I was 10 years ago or could have been if only this, that, or not happened. That fascination is always self-centered. And the reason the fascination is always self-centered is because it sits and examines an image that is fixed in the mind. An experience that has been crystallized and created into something that mind, when it looks at it, that feeling when it's caught up in it, it's so fascinating to be me. It's so fascinating to have that person who didn't do this, because when I look at that picture of them in my mind, I feel the pain that took place when it happened, and it is fixed. It is fixed. The fascination and the fixture, one thing, producing a self that believes the sensations that fixed set of opposites produces is the same thing as being alive. And it isn't being alive. There's no life in it. It's a queer admixture of different qualities appearing out of the past. As the self that holds the image and is fascinated by it begins to measure what to do now with what it's beginning to experience as a result of its fixation. And the stronger the fixation, the more the attempt to change or control it, the stronger the wish to extract the sense of self from it. And a person is lost in a little tiny world, which to the self that produces it is glory. But to the nature that is put on this planet in order to transcend itself and find a world in which its birth is eternally happening, it's a prison and a punishment and a horror. So awakening is not a sweet thing. because it's the gradual recognition that you have defaulted, that you've given up, that you've dropped into a fascination with yourself that has so fixed the ideas from which you live that the very idea, even the speaker talking about it the way he does, disturbs you. And it must be shattered. And nothing can drop the hammer on it apart from your wish to be free. That's the first step. There is no freedom in feeling sorry for yourself, even though when you're sorry for yourself, there's always some surreptitious plan in the future where you're not going to feel that way anymore. That first act, the hammer blow, which finally destroys hatred and fear in the human being, that hammer blow is the dawning of a light inside of a human being by which they start to recognize that they have chosen the wrong course, they've taken the wrong path, they're in love with the wrong thing.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
So what we're going to talk about now is the nature of this new consciousness. I'm going to talk about what it means to have cosmic consciousness. We're going to talk about what it means to be in relationship with the divine, so that when we're finished, we're able to look at what it is that we've seen with our own minds and used for ourselves as proper tools to uncover both the source of our present torment and isolation and captivity, and at the same time to recognize that built right into that same consciousness that we're going to talk about, built into it, unescapably, if one sees, unescapably built right into it, is the triumph of God's life, right in it. And it's a phenomenal thing that one's consciousness is at once as unlimited as the creative life that has produced everything that one sees, and at the same time it can serve as a cell in which one can see absolutely nothing other than the self that paints the walls and calls it a kingdom. All in one mind, all in one consciousness. You've heard the expression, there's nothing new under the sun, haven't you? What do you think that means? You think that means that the latest Cadillac is already out there? In a manner of speaking, it does. Even though its form hasn't taken place, it couldn't come into existence in the year 2006, 2012, 20, whatever it may be, unless the principles, the technology, unless all of the elements possible for its existence already are potential. So nothing new under the sun means just exactly that. It means that all things are essentially happening at all times, but that because of man's relationship to time and the development of his scientific, artistic understanding as a matter of reflection of life, things have to take their course in time. But things taking course in time is not the same thing as the timelessness that all those courses are held in. Everything already exists. Nothing new exists under the sun. And the reason that's an important idea for us to understand as individuals is because it means that whatever it is, and we have experience of this, whatever it is that's taken place. Have you ever I don't know what it would be, tasted something that was really new? Oh, you know, I wish with more than I'm ever able to say how I wish I could get you to just shake it off. You know why your lives are so shrunken and turned inward? And they are. Why there's very little joy in your hearts apart from when you get stuff that you want. It's because day in and day out, you taste the same life. Every morning you wake up and you taste the self that looks out and surveys the day. Every luncheon you sit and you talk with people about the same things and taste the same bitterness that always accompanies gossip and self-betrayal. The life is essentially nothing but a kind of lazy Susan on which the plates were laid out 10 million years ago, and human beings sit and, not knowing it, taste the same thing every day. And when I ask if you ever taste something new, I'm talking even in the most common mundane level, but taste something new means, relative to this idea that nothing new is under the sun, it means that there is always the possibility in the moment of tasting something new, a new emotion, a new pain, a new sorrow, not the revisitation of something, a new unhappiness, a new death, a new birth, a new joy, a new light, a new touch. That in that moment, when the person has that instant in which, if they're fortunate enough, and it could be something just as mundane as you taste a fruit that came from faraway land, and you say, "My, what in the world is the taste of this fruit?" And it also could be you hurt yourself in a way you've never hurt yourself before. The speaker's good at that. And when you hurt yourself in a way you've never hurt yourself before, that's a new taste. And you know why it's a new taste? Because you, this thing that has become centered around a set of conditioned ideas and the myth of social happiness, that self has never tasted anything new. It was set with the lazy Susan when it was born. The parents said, "This is what you eat, only you'll have better food than I will. Just get a bigger lazy Susan with more plates on it, and then you'll be happy." But you have a new pain. And you can't have a new pain that isn't part of your consciousness already. Because if it wasn't part of your consciousness, you wouldn't feel the pain. So here's life and it delivers a blow. Or here's life and it delivers a piece of joy. It brings a new light into you. And for an instant, you realize, you know what? That's always been in there. I never knew I could feel that way. What you call good or bad. I didn't know those things were inside of me, but obviously it's inside of me, isn't it? Where is one's momentary expression of life when they experience it, if not part of the consciousness that's reflecting whatever the event is that made the sound, that made the noise, that made the feeling, that made the taste? It's like that ragu spaghetti sauce. It's in there. It's in there. But when a person doesn't understand the two ideas that nothing new is under the sun, and that at the same time, whatever it is that one experiences exists as a potential in their own consciousness, if a person can't put those two ideas together, then they never will understand that whatever it is that we are willing to experience through our awareness of something is the same as discovering nothing exists apart from us. Can you put that together in your mind, at least as an idea? That there's nothing that awareness can't touch. And awareness doesn't just touch, it penetrates. Awareness doesn't just penetrate, it permeates. Which means that there's nothing that one's awareness can't be in relationship with, that relationship isn't the same as that individual's participation in the consciousness that gave rise to that awareness and what it holds. It's not divided the way one sees it as being. Because you see it as being fixed stuff so that you can get stuff from what's fixed. And it's the very nature, the very mind that fixes things in order to give itself a sense of security that betrays itself in the fixation, because the fixation is not security, it's the source of fear, because no security exists that one clings to that doesn't come with fear. And there's a completely different order of security, and it's impersonal. It's godly. Not that an individual is God, and may God help the people who think they are, but that the individual lives moment to moment to moment in a relationship with creation, wherefore his awareness of it and his attention to it, being first for him or her, produces a relationship with creation for which there is no substitute, which brings us to an immediate problem because of the way the mind works. When I say the word creation to you, you think of something fixed. The mind can't help itself. It is an instrument that knows what it knows by examining what it is fixed in itself. That's how the mind works. But the mind doesn't know that the mind works by fixing things, because it's fascinated with its own fixations. So that day in and day out, a person lives in this tiny world, a corrupted world, because every image, each generation of it, is further denigrated, not only by the mind that produces it, but by the society that redefines it in order to keep itself in place. So that every moment, a person is living in creation and not seeing it. Because what they see are the commodities, what they see are the forms, what they see is that which by that form defines them in the moment relative to what they're looking at. Oh, look, the sun's not out. It's a bad day. Oh, look, the sun's out too much. It's a bad day. Oh, look, it's kind of sunny and cloudy. That's a good day. That's all human beings have. is judgments based upon images fixed in the mind, whose very existence as a judgment sets in place the judge, which is all the human being wants to be in life, even though he's judged by his very ignorance, because it cuts him off from the possibility of being born, of knowing in himself or herself that a life exists entirely outside of that consistently conflicted self, always trying to figure out how to escape the very condition it produces in its own uninvestigated actions. So we need new understanding. What would have happened on this planet if certain individuals hadn't paid the price to be reborn? What would have happened on this planet? You can't imagine. I'm telling you, you can't imagine. The only way you'll ever know is when you finally wake up enough to see how things are. Images and their fixtures, meaning the things that are associated with them, they don't get more subtle. Images become denser and denser each time the mind wraps itself around the images. It lends substance to it, and the substance becomes thicker and more real. What do you think causes dependency other than an idea? What do you think an obsession is? An obsession is a single idea taken to its furthest limit by the mind.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Creation is not something that happened. Creation is not the forms that you see. The forms that you see, the things created, they are a subset of creation. They are an expressed form whose interior life is creation, because the interior life of all things, including stones themselves, is in creation, constant creation. Nothing exists that isn't part of a dynamic that is unfolding, both in terms of its birth and death and rebirth. Nothing. But that has no meaning to human beings, because they haven't the facility awakened in them to participate in creation. Because to participate in creation is not to create your life. It's to recognize that your life is not apart from the creation you see, and that the pain in one's life is because they are apart from the creation they see, trying to get a hold of what they see as being creation to give them an imagined contentment. Is there any part of a river that stops? Contentment isn't a commodity. It's a degree of relationship in consciousness. And that consciousness is not fixed any more than the creation that reveals that consciousness to the person who awakens in it. It's vibrant. It's active. And real life is the gradual dismissal, dropping of, dying to the life that fixes everything. So that at the end of that nature, at the end, as that nature falls away, there is a natural recognition and realization of that creation that is flowing. But not flowing. And this is the problem. Virtually every word the speaker says brings up inside of you a fixed image. I love the flow. In fact, I'm always in it. Aren't you? Just look at me. God, I wish you could see yourself. You're about as fluid as a rock. Even animals. I watch my deer all the time at where I live. Not my deer. I watch the deer where I live. And they'll have a tiff, Angel, the mama deer, one of the kids is interfering with her apple time. And she'll give it a big whack with her front paw. And the kid jumps and it's over. And the kid doesn't go, I hate that mother. Why is she always kicking me? And she doesn't think to herself, stupid kid, why don't you learn the lesson? Just happening. Beginning and ending, but not as separate movements, but as one state, one creation. And it's impossible to love God without understanding what it means to love His creation. It's impossible. If you say that you love God and then resist what happens to you, you don't love God. You love your idea of God that is fixed in your mind with pleasing ideas. Because one cannot love God apart from His creation. And again, I have to do this. Not fixed creation. His life, which, by the way, is love. Because nothing exists in creation as it actually is that is not born from love. Love is what gives creation. Creation are the forms. Creation is the expression. Behind the form and the expression is that which has reconciled all the energies and particles and qualities in order to give rise to that. So the only way to know anything about what God's love is, not to know God. One does not know God. One can know something of God's love. But one cannot know anything of God's love apart from His creation. And His creation is not here for your pleasure to pull things from in order to sustain your sense of self. His creation is here for you to participate in. Because there's nothing in creation, there's no part of it that isn't an equal shareholder. There's no part that's greater than the whole. The whole is made up of an interaction between all of the parts that don't consider themselves apart from the whole. It's one thing, but the mind can't get itself around ideas like that, which is why it's always trying to pull something out of life so that it can fixate on it and then find its sense of self there. There's no sense of self as you know self in creation. There can't be, because it doesn't stop for you to fix. Human beings think they can stop life. And a part of them actually succeeds at doing it, but not really stopping life, just stopping the potential for them to be reborn. It's all the human being succeeds at. They actually cut themselves off from the potential of being in relationship with a world in which, through God's creation, leads to a recognition and a realization of a love that has nothing whatsoever to do with anything that one knows themselves through or by. I have to tell you a story, and I better get to it because I've gone on quite a bit, to give you an idea what it means for us to start being in relationship with creation. And I'll touch on it one time quickly before I go. One is not in relationship with creation through their thoughts and ideals about it. What one is in relationship with through their thoughts and ideals about creation is their own creation about creation. That's where evil is born. No evil exists apart from human beings creating their ideas about creation. When a person begins to understand that awareness that they are given as a gift freely, by which with their free will they can give to creation, then that individual is awarded for his willingness to give himself up the fixed self and all of its imagery. One is rewarded then with a relationship in which and for which she suddenly finds that there is a world that they have no idea existing already, potential in their own heart, in their own mind, laying there like a kernel of wheat, waiting to be treated properly so that it can sprout. And in that sprouting, in that birthing, take part in all of the conditions that make it possible to be born. When you think of being born, you think of someone who you will be. When you think of God's love, you think of something that you have extrapolated as being something that will add a measure of greatness to yourself. These qualities have nothing in them at all that has anything to do with I as we presently understand it, but a new order of I, which is what Christ represents. A new relationship born out of that light that by its very nature isn't just in relationship with all that is being created repeatedly, eternally, but that actually gives birth to it because it's part of what reconciles it. And the last point before the story, and if you could understand this, to be aware of that, no matter how limited. You know, this is a big problem. Here, a person actually thinks to themselves, well, I don't, you know, I can kind of feel what you're talking about. I actually see some of it, but I don't know. I have no awareness, or I don't know what it means. And since I don't know what it means, or I don't have what you're talking about, I'm just going to remain as I've been. I'm just going to throw in the towel. No. No, you can start now because that's what the creation is.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit guyfinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
And when you start now, even the idea of it, when you start now, there's relationship with the consciousness of now, of new, of starting, right now. Hey, you know, that feels good. And then in comes all that flood of fixed ideas, and it disappears. Start again. And then little by little by little, the sphere of one's understanding, because love makes it possible. It grows, it expands. And as it expands, one is more and more in natural relationship without thinking with what they're aware of. Not in individual instances. Awareness never sits and separates out this from that. But awareness makes it possible for an individual to make connection with that which that very life he or she is aware of wants them to have awareness of. I tell you, this is true. God wants you to taste his new life every day in a new way. That is not an exaggeration. But I watch even while I'm talking to you. And you prefer the state of yourself. And do you know why you prefer the state of yourself? Because to be aware of the state of yourself puts you in relationship with the creation that has in it ugliness. And you think to yourself, this ugliness can't be part of creation. No, ugliness itself is not a part of creation, but the created self that is attracted to itself causes that ugliness, and there's no way to escape or transcend that self until the ugliness is experienced as being one's own creation. Then it changes for the person because they see, I thought this cosmic consciousness thing was going to be a gas. And oh yeah, but when I was imagining it when I was a boy, or whatever age one starts to think about this, or rebirth, you know, boy, I can't wait. People love me wherever I go, and I can manifest money probably, and I won't have any problems. I'll have abundance everywhere. You know, I mean, it'll be, what a gas. I can't wait. What a sick bunch of lies all of that is that you tell yourselves and that the world propagates. Be an awakened human being means that you are sharing the burden of creation. And you're sharing in the love that bears that burden for the purpose of that creation. And every part of it is sweet, even the bitterness in it. Because it all serves something greater than the self that sits and judges according to its past. Eight minutes left. I'll try to do the story for you. Take a deep breath. There was once a kingdom, a great kingdom, no doubt. And in this great kingdom, all was well. No matter what it was that happened, it always turned out to be right. That's what makes a great kingdom. All things serve the goodness of it. And creation is good. Not your creation. Creation is good. I do believe God even said that, or at least so that one book says, doesn't he? And this good, wise father who was in charge of this kingdom had two children, a son and a daughter. And when it came time for the son and daughter to go out on their own, as all sons and daughters must in order to eventually understand the goodness of the kingdom in which they were born, part of their process of departing the kingdom in order to understand its goodness is that they're given everything they need where they're sent in order to be in relationship with the kingdom they were sent from. Meaning that they're given everything they need to create a reflection of their Father's kingdom. So they're given all the tools they need to build their estate. They're given the farm animals. They're given the plows. They're given the saws and the hammers. They're given the raw materials. All of it given freely by the Father to the son and the daughter. I better do this because if I get to the end of the story, I won't be able to do this. That means they're given creation. The whole of its life, every part that they don't see, nevertheless, they're given. And the son and daughter go out and do the things that sons and daughters do when they are not quite yet really sons and daughters. And each goes about building their estate. And they both hire as many people as they can. And they both design what they think a proper estate is. And it isn't long before they're just wasting materials. They just waste everywhere. Not only are they wasting materials, but the things that are erecting their estates, they're horrors. They're horrors. They have drafts running through them. What does that mean? It means that there's nothing of true warmth in them. They're all filled with the coldness of the imagery from which they were produced. And they fall apart. What does that mean in your life? Every day your life falls apart. I don't care what you have. And the father, looking out, waits. And the children go through the next stage that children do when they erect the estates they do in the idea of what it means to create a life. And they begin to hate and blame. The craftsmen are bad tools. And they begin to turn on their father. Bad tools. You gave me bad things to work with. Because if you didn't give me bad tools, I wouldn't have built a bad estate. That's you. Every time you look and complain and blame, every time you turn and say life isn't right because of what I was given. What you do is you turn and you slap the father in the face because he gave you the tools you need. The problem is you don't know anything about the tools and you don't know how they're used. But one of the children, the daughter, began to grow weary and recognized that there's something terribly wrong with the fact that I'm hating my father. He gave me the tools. He gave me the materials. I've seen his estate. Surely this can't be right. What has become of my life? And unlike the son who was unrepentant, who continued to try to build and erect new and newer things all the time until finally he had nothing, the daughter came back to her father and said, as is the right of the daughter of the father, "Dad, something went wrong. First I was sure that it was what you gave me. There was something wrong with the tools. Then I thought it was the materials. Then I thought it was the people I hired. Finally, I blamed you, but I recognize now that that can't be so because I know in my heart of hearts, and you either know this or not, I know you're a good father. I know you wouldn't give me things like that. So what I want to know is what happened. I don't understand." And her father looked at her and said, "You know what? That's a good start. That's a really good start. Because before you can possibly come to understand what happened, you have to stop being sure that you know what happened and blaming people for it." She said, "Well, what do I do? What's involved in this?" He said, first he said, "You have to realize that if these tools and all the elements that I gave you, you have to realize they're already in relationship with one another." What does that mean? Everything in life is in perfect relationship. The tools that build, the things that are built, their birth, their death, everything. Perfect relationship in creation. all the time, not something that's occurring moment to moment, but a continual expression of a perfect relationship in which creation is expressing the love that gives rise to it perfectly. He says to his daughter, look, the tools and all the things you're given, they're already in relationship with one another. Do you think I built this place? He said, no, it's being built by these things. Well, she says, well, then I guess that can only mean one thing. He said, I think you're getting close. She said, I'm not in relationship with the tools and the elements. Because if they're already in relationship and all I have to do is lend them what I know is right, instead of trying to use them myself to build something of myself, from these things, then perhaps I need to start over. And he said, that's exactly what you need to do. He said, but I can promise you, you'll have a different result this time. You'll have to do it a number of times. But gradually, as you learn to let go, you'll come into relationship with a life that already has in it everything that you need. Won't be easy, daughter, he said, but I have confidence in you because you've now seen the truth of the fact that it wasn't the tools, it wasn't the materials that you were given that caused you to be a miserable human being. What's making you miserable is that you insist on trying to wield them according to the ideas that you have fixed in your mind about what real life is about. And she went out and she spent the rest of her life learning to let the tools that she was given and the materials that came with them build an estate for her that had no drafts in it, that didn't fall apart, so that she no longer had to blame and hate and be afraid. I'm describing to you what real life is. I'm describing to you what it means to be a human being awake and reborn. It is to be a person who is a participant in creation. Moment to moment, in words, to be aware of the whole of all that you can be aware of, so that in that awareness, your experience of creation is both at once something personal because the mind registers it, and it is impersonal because in that moment-to-moment awareness, you are not trying to control anything. You are the seer of all things. You are the taster of all moments. And even as the moment is tasted, you are the taster of that which leaves. And that which leaves is being filled, and you're the taster of what is being filled. And there aren't words to describe what is an eternal action. But it is an eternal action that I'm describing, and it is your awareness of that creation as it actually is that gives you entrance into what is eternal. And it is what is eternal in the human soul, creations of that relationship with God's life, that produces for a person the end of their unhappiness and the beginning of a new kind of happiness that is forever being given and taken and taken and given, because the love is what gives birth to it. So you move past the physical into the true spiritual. Now you must find out what all of this means.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.